Maybe you've seen these words on a billboard, someplace around town, an expression that reminds us that there is a God and he actually speaks to people like you, like me. I don't know if there is a more common denominator that describes people in virtually every era. It's not a modern malady. It's something that is true no matter what time or place you happen to live. The reality is that there are problems people face, and they happen whether you are young or old. They happen whether you are rich or poor. Problems will visit you whether you are intelligent and educated or didn't finish the sixth grade. Problems are going to come and find you whether you are a man or a woman. They will come to you whether you are poor or whether you are rich. It's true. And they will find you regardless of your political affiliation. In spite of all the promises out there, Democrat, Republican, or otherwise, you will face problems. In every continent and to every culture and color of people, troubles come calling. You can put a sign out in front of your life that's sort of visible and on display that says, "No soliciting, stay away," and problems will come. They'll ignore the sign completely, and they will come and make themselves at home. Now, maybe you've heard of the slave song of old that I think it captures words that probably none of us can fully relate to. But nobody knows the troubles I've seen. Nobody knows but Jesus. Nobody knows the trouble I've seen. Glory, hallelujah. And probably the affirmation at the end of that was what kept the slave from insanity. Nobody knows, it was probably fairly accurate to say, but Jesus, which was equally accurate to sing. It's true, the troubles known to slaves tower above anything that I can relate to. You know, I sat there thinking about those words because the song just came to me this week, and I thought, you know, I can reach deep into my bag of problems and they pale in comparison to a good day faced by the ones that sang this song. But I still have my problems. I read somewhere this week that the very word problem comes from a Greek word. You're going to love this. In fact, now's a great time to pull out your outline because you want to make note of this. This was huge for me, and I'm going to guess it's going to have traction in your life as well. It's got mileage. It's got some usefulness for us. The word problem comes from a Greek word, Greek root, which is probalein, P-R-O-B-A-L-E-I-N. Doesn't matter to you until I tell you this. The word probalein means to throw or to drive or to thrust forward. Now put it together this way, and all of a sudden an insight comes your way and mine. Problems are the very means by which God changes us, transforms us, and, get this, drives us forward. In fact, writes Tim Hansel, without problems, you and I would not grow. Imagine that. All of a sudden, problems aren't such a nasty enemy or foe. Or at least you begin to consider that. If you're brand new to us, I hope it won't be long before you start saying these words and praying these words. Lord, make me more like you and less like me. Now, if you've been around any length of time, you know we pray that a lot around here. If you were to interview me and say, Pastor, what's changed so much around our church? What would you describe as the single most important development that's transforming our church? I would say it's those words. Lord, make me more like you and less like me. Because it has implication on what I do all week long on the job. It has implication on how I relate to Debbie all week long, my wife. It has implications on what kind of a dad I am, how I manage my money, how I manage my time. It has to do with everything from my problems to my celebrations. Lord, make me more like you and less like me. And it occurred to me this week. I reached into the middle of that and I thought, you know, every time I pray that, I'm praying for trouble. I'm praying for problems. I'm praying with a knowledge that says troubles are what God uses to transform me. But if that's to happen, we need a clear, very clear view of the one who says to you and I, resolutely, I am the Lord Almighty, and I'm here to help. He doesn't just throw you or me into problems, say, good luck, God bless you. He says, I am here with you, and I will use this problem or these troubles in your life to bring about something that approaches that prayer, making you more like my son and less like yourself. Now, I want you to locate, if you haven't already, another song of the sons of Korah. We got acquainted a little bit with them last week. Didn't have a good dad. Korah was a bad guy, but the sons turned out good. And they were the ones God used to write and compose 12 songs. This one's Psalm or Song 46. It's on page 403. And it presents God as an ever-present help to his people. Now, I need to tell you, as you're on your way there, reach for a Bible if you don't have one. It's coded to that page, 403. And let me say just a word of context. We're not really sure when or under what circumstances Psalm 46 was written. Most certainly, however, and you'll see that as a sort of an obvious point in a moment, it was written during a time of trouble. Things were not good. Times were tough. Problems had come upon the writers and upon the people reading these words. Perhaps it was possibly now, it's just conjecture, but the Assyrians had invaded Judah and maybe by now they were surrounding Jerusalem. It's a possibility. That would be told in 2 Kings chapter 18 and following. You get a little sense of a possibility for when these words were written and to whom. Still, the truth of this song speaks to every single person, as I said at the beginning, in every era who faces trouble. So look on with me. It was already read a little bit anyway by the worship team. God is our refuge and strength and ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. Though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging, Selah. How many of you are in the habit of reading the Selahs that come up? They're there. They're intentional. They're purposed by God for us to, you'll see in a minute, pause and ponder. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in an uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. Come and see. Come take a peek with me is the feeling here. The works of the Lord. The desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes wars stop to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Selah. There are two promises when we're faced with problems that have been presented for us here. These are takeaways. These are things that are going to help you if you're facing an unresolved medical condition. Right here. These are problems. These are takeaways that are going to work for you if you got a relationship snag. Right here. You can't pull it off financially, you're going to get help right now. The first is this: God is always present to help. Starting at verse 1, he announces he is our refuge. Now, see that those words again? God is our refuge, a shelter from danger. The word refuge is used 9 times in the Psalms to describe a God who is present in the midst of problems. Let me say that again. 9 different times, God is our refuge is used to describe a God who is present. Circle this preposition, in our problems. That's a critical point to understand. It is not a promise to you or to me that he will meet you on the other side of your problem. That's not what's being said here. You and I make a gross mistake about the God we can count on if we think, well, he's on the other side saying, keep going, attaboy, attagirl, keep going, you're almost there. No, 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 no. Here's a God that says, I am in your problems. It's a praise of God's presence as a refuge or shelter in our problems. It's a big piece to understand. God is your refuge during the storm or struggle. While the danger of defeat is huge and looming all around you. I always think of, when I read those words, God is our refuge, the idea of a fortress. It takes me back to when Debbie and I were traveling from Los Angeles, where we live, to Oklahoma, Tulsa to be specific. And as we almost, the moment we crossed the border into Oklahoma, we hit bad weather. And I mean, it was really bad. You know, it's in the tornado, what's it, Tornado Alley or whatever they call that. And it was that time of year. So as we are cruising into Oklahoma and going past Oklahoma City, heading up to the northeast corner, which is where Tulsa is, the skies are getting darker, the rain is coming stronger, and then there's a pounding that starts to happen. And we could sense, we're from California, you don't know about weather, but we could sense it's more than rain hitting us. And sure enough, we stopped, and you could see, like basketball-size hail. It's an exaggeration, of course, but you get my point. All of a sudden, there's hail, and it's big, and it's bouncing on the ground. And there's this instinctive sense of, this is terrible. I could scratch my car, you know? I mean, this is awful, and it's a clanging. If you've been in that kind of hail, you know what I'm talking about. And we're looking for some place to hide, some place to take shelter. And sure enough, just as quickly as this hail started dumping on us, there's an overpass straight ahead. By now, there's lightning, and you hear the sound almost instantly with the light flash. So it's got to be close. And we get under this overpass. It's a road going over us, and we're the only car there, and I'm just breathing hard, and I'm looking out in front of us and looking behind, and there's more hail bouncing and hitting hard. Lightning, and suddenly and there's this explosion that happens, and it's a light pole above the overpass. It was just, it had to be like a lightning rod, and it hit it directly and blew it up. Now, there's that kind of drama under which we found ourselves feeling very safe, though the storm was anything but safe. That's what we're reading about here. God is our safe place, our refuge, our fortress against the storm that's anything but safe. Did you notice the tense of the words used here to describe trouble? There, verses 2 and 3 is what I'm referring to. They're all written in the present tense. Look back with me. Therefore, we will not fear though the earth give way. Not gave way, give way. The mountains fall, not fell, fall into the heart of the sea. Though its waters roar. That's present tense, not roared. Remember a long time ago when this happened? No, no. It's now. Though the waters roar and foam, not foamed, the mountains quake, not quaked. Again and again, he's pointing out the fact that it's now. The storm has hit. Troubles are upon us. And that's why you see the word the first time at the end of verse 3, repeated three times, Selah. I paused the first time I read it. It's a musical indicator suggesting it's a good place to pause and ponder, to think out what was just said. Well, he's talking about troubles, so he's inviting you and I to take inventory of the storms in our lives. What's happening? What troubles are you facing? You sit here this morning and it's a marriage problem or some other relational problem. Is that the storm? It's scary. It's real. It's anything but safe for you. Maybe for you it's a spiritually indifferent child. Your child is now kind of grown and she or he is starting to walk on their own and make their own choices and decisions, and it just grieves your heart that God's not in the picture. It's like they've almost got amnesia. God who? They don't even remember. And you're in that terrible spot. As how many parents can report that you're powerless except to be on your knees before God and beg God to turn the corner in your child's life? I personally don't know of a difficult pain faced by parents. Because we're fix-its. We're fixers, aren't we? We want to make it better. I learned that when my kids scraped their knee, little teensy people. I can't force the situation to get better. Probably the struggle that, or the trouble that captures more of us more of the time. If you were to join us on Thursday morning for men's prayer, you would find more references to medical conditions being submitted, as Pastor Brian asked you to do every week. Dozens of them. People talking about pains. People talking about a chronic medical condition. A life and death fight with cancer. How many in our church are fighting that right now? That's the Selah here. It's stop and pause and take inventory of your own troubles. Maybe for you it's that job. You just hate it. It's a vocational dead end. So you're trying everything to be a Christian on the job and, you know, do the stuff of Colossians 3 and, you know, work as unto the Lord and so on, but it's just a bomb. It's a disaster. And it's led to things like financial fatigue. You just don't know where the debt's going to end. You just can't get out of the hole. Are you taking your own inventory? That's just some of what I hear on a kind of a daily basis. And pray with people through. And then I come to this so often because it tells me he is your refuge in such storms. And we're told also, secondly, he is our strength. See that also in verse 1? He is our refuge, a fortress, and he is our strength. This means we aren't just to hide from trouble in him. Listen to this. But we're to get help in trouble from him. Let me say that again. We're not just to hide from trouble in him, but we're to get help in trouble from him. Think about that. Think about how that looks in your own life. Troubles tend to drain our strength, don't they? Show me somebody that's living with a chronic problem, and I will show you someone that fights fatigue all the time. When my brother was diagnosed with multiple myeloma and given 18 months to live, he's now 7 years that they've caged the cancer. Or 6 years now, something like in there. He could tell you the day, how many years passed. And And it's the most wearisome, exhausting thing. Not only the chemo that went on for 3 years, but just the fatigue of being under it. The wearisomeness, the drain to our strength. We get weary and worn down. But this is where we're told right here, if I'm reading it right, His strength helps us in our weakness to be strong. It gives us a supply we don't have for ourselves. So He is our refuge and our strength. I want you to think back to a story of Paul, the apostle. You don't have to turn there, but make note of this. It's in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, his story is told. But Paul talks there about a trouble. He had just seen a vision that was huge and glorious. Then on the heels of that, kind of how life is, isn't it? You have this wonderful victory and then slam-a-rooney, you're face down. And you get hit hard. Well, Paul was having one of those times, and no one knows for sure what it was, but it had the qualities we can relate to when you think about a thorn. In fact, that's what he calls it, a thorn in his flesh. And it was sharp. I've been doing some yard work lately, and I had a discussion with my kids. Were there thorns on these roses before Adam and Eve ate the fruit? You know, it's kind of a fun thing. I'm sure there weren't, but anyway, it's my thought. And I love blackberries. I love boysenberries and all the berries. But it's insane how many thorns there are, right? But so everybody knows about thorns, right? We all know about thorns. But think about what a thorn represents. It's kind of a stabbing effect. It's sharp and it's stabbing and it's irritating. I'm 6'3", 200, and all it takes is a tiny little something, an irritation, and I'm kind of walking funny because it's unrelenting. It won't go away. It's why Paul said 3 times, God, take it away. It says he pleaded with the Lord. The word there is begged. God, I beg you. Take this thorn away from me. Now, when you rub against the thorn for a while, what happens? Somebody want to help me? What happens when you rub against the thorn? You're picking blackberry bushes. Put your arms way in there. Do that most of the day. What's going to happen? You mean the thorns are not going to finally smooth out and... You get my point? You get cut up. It just hurts more. You get more and more cuts. They're all over the place. It still scrapes. It never loses its sharpness. Nor does it give up on its sting. Thorns just stay pricky and they stay irritating. And eventually, you lose heart and you get drained. You get tired. Here's an observation for you. I think most anybody I've met can handle problems short term. Maybe you're one of them. You're thinking, you know, I'm okay with that. But what happens when it intensifies? What happens when it persists and doesn't leave you? It's not a temporary guest, it's a permanent resident in your life. You need what Paul reached for and what the song we sang about earlier references. A mighty fortress is our God. But how are these things yours? What's the delivery system? God's our refuge, God's our strength. What's the delivery system that God had in mind? Well, His word tells us exactly what that is. God's help comes when we come to Him. All right? His help comes to all who will. Look at verse 8 and you'll see what I mean. Come and see the works of the Lord, the desolations He has brought on the earth. The first step of faith for folks facing troubles is to turn your focus from your troubles to the God who will be with you and help you in your troubles. Did you hear what I said? It is the first step of faith. You will not do this instinctively and you will not do it easily. It's a step of faith. I am choosing to, as a step of faith, turn my focus from my bill turn my focus from my child and the struggles with him or her. I will turn my focus from my problem that's pressing in on me and not letting go to the God who says, I am there with you. That's the first step of faith. The Lord Almighty, the God of Jacob, is his name. That's why he repeats it. He wants to make sure you understand who he's talking about in inviting you and me to turn to him. That's why verse 7, look at verse 7 and verse 11, he repeats exactly the same phrase. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. He can handle what comes our way. He has the power. That's the Lord Almighty. And he has the proven track record. That's the God of Jacob. That's why he puts those together. Ever wondered why those labels? Who is he? He's the Lord Almighty. He can handle it. He's got the power to do it. He's the God of Jacob, not a new God on the scene. He's the creator God that if you were to open your Bible and take it all the way back to Genesis, you would find him to be the God of Jacob. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he's got a proven track record. And he can handle any foe, even the devil himself. My family recently, prompted by my son, who's now in eighth grade, or going into eighth grade, but in seventh grade, a teacher asked him at Conestoga to write a paper and gave him a selection of people. I found it surprising and wonderful that Martin Luther's name was on the list, the great reformer. So my son began to read about Martin Luther and was captured by him. Jim Wilson told me that there's a movie out that I never saw called Luther, fairly recent, last couple of years. If you have not seen Luther, it's just called Luther, by all means, you need to rent it. It is powerful. And it portrays him not just as a reformer in the early 1500s, not just as a great leader, not just as a courageous man. He had all of those credentials. He was a Bible translator. He was one that believed, you know, part of our problem is only the learned elite clergy have the goods. It was sort of a built-in way of keeping everybody else out of the know. So they were dependent on the elite. And it created all sorts of corruptions which caused him to become a reformer that ultimately transformed the church. But what you may not know is he's a musician as well. In fact, the song that we sang earlier this morning, A Mighty Fortress Is Our God, is his best known hymn. It was written by Martin Luther, probably the most intimate description of a deep struggle that he was facing. It reflects his intense struggle with Satan. Here are some of the words just to refresh your memory. And though this world with devils filled should threaten to undo us. Is that a word that describes your situation? Maybe not directly from the devil, but it sure feels like you're alone. And it feels like there's a lot of devils that fill your world right now. And there's this constant threat that they could undo you. You know, one small step from slaughter. Maybe that's how you feel. He then went on to write this, our helper, he amid the flood of mortal ills prevailing, dost ask who that may be? Who is this helper? Lord Sabbath, it's Christ Jesus, it is he. Lord Sabbath, his name from age to age, the same, and he must win the battle. And he will. He will. So we're told by the sons of Korah a truth that they knew well. Verse 8, come and see the works of the Lord. You can't read the Bible and not see the works of the Lord. It's meant for you and me to see it. It's filled with them. But let me give you a couple of like hot spots to go to. Okay? Make note of this. Psalm 78 is one of them. Psalm 78 is wonderful as it's a display of the works of the Lord. In reading that one psalm, it's fasten your seatbelt time. It just moves quick and it's real exciting. Over in the New Testament, there's Hebrews 11, which is a gallery, really, of the great works of God in people's lives. Now, before we leave this, let me point out one final directive given to people like you and me who are found with problems. It's the directive that comes in verse 10. Be still and behold. It's one of the most well-known but perhaps least shown verses in our lives from the Bible. Sounds good. Be still and know that I am God. It's succinct. I like that sound. We've even invented cliches, haven't we? Let go and let God. They kind of capture a little of the, or attempt to embrace some of the meaning of that. Be still and know that I am God. But there's something deeper here. Something that doesn't come so easily for many. So let's get it. And I think if we get it, we're going to get better because of it. So what is it? It's be still. Let's start with that. It's a Hebrew word that means to relax, to do nothing, and to be silent. I told you it was not going to be easy, right? I've not met too many people who find it easy to relax, to do nothing, and to hush. It's hard for us to do. I hear this frequently from people who come to church on a regular basis. You know part of why I come? It's quiet. My world's busy and loud. Add to that a mixture of my problems, and I'm desperate for quiet. When troubles come, we're inclined to do what? What do most of us instinctively do when troubles come? Run. We run. And we tend to run harder and faster and further. But some troubles can't be outrun. In fact, most can't. You found that to be true in your life? You can't outrun them. So we're told here to be still. Here's an interesting thought. It's from a verb stem in Hebrew that says, you can do it. In other words, you're given counsel because it's understood by the God that authored this. You can do it. It's not just casual like, hey, be still. And in the stillness, you'll know God. It's a bold statement, a mission statement for your life when you're in the midst of troubles or problems. You be still. Put your name in there. You, Steve, be still because you can. You say, no, I'm not good at that. To which he says, yes, you can, because if you weren't capable of doing it, I would never tell you to do it. You see? I'm giving you something to do that will benefit you. And I'm giving it to you because you can do it. You can take my counsel this morning, God says, and plug it in. Remember, I'm here to help. But you have to let me help. How? By being still. And when you do, you will discover something else. You will behold. That's what he means by, you will know that I am God. To see something clearly. To take the necessary time, be still, and to, in that time, see and sense God coming to your situation and to give you rest and aid. So are you still before God long enough to hear him whisper, you know, Steve, I love you. I really love you. And I'm here to help you. In the middle of your problem, do you sense his presence? If not, stay still and step back from your struggle long enough to draw strength from God. Selah. I'd like you to bow your heads, if you would, with me. for a moment. In troubles, if we're to see God, we need to come and see. And stay long enough to behold. To behold a God who never changes, who remains the Holy One, the glorious and sovereign One, who comes to give you and me his refuge and strength. Stuff you and I aren't likely to get on the run. Lord, make us more like you and less like us. And as you do, God, remind us that the tool you often use is problems that drive and thrust us forward. Dear God, don't let us forget that this is your way to make us holy, as you are holy. In the name of Jesus Christ, I pray.